So first of all, Frohlich and Chanukah. Hope you guys had an awesome Shabbos Chanukah. This is an amazing week, but we'll talk about that a little later. Hang on 1 second. We're going to start Hilchos Deos, Halacha Vav, Perek Bet Halacha Vav, chapter 2, verse 6. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, but during the time that Mincha was going on, I was asleep, and I had a dream that seven stalks of wheat were growing out of my seven toes.
Okay, that's really deep. That, by the way, is a whole discussion in terms of the relationship between Yosef and Chanukah. Why Yosef is dreaming about wheat stalks. If you think about it, the Jews were not farmers. They were shepherds. Right? Where was agriculture in the Middle East at that time? Egypt. Okay? So he was dreaming about the wealth of Egypt, which puts a whole different spin on what might have been going on there. But let's not go there right now. We can go about that in the Masiba. Okay. So, this is a halacha which is so overlooked and so missed and so... people don't take this seriously. They don't understand what a serious halacha this is. Okay? So, it says, Asur. Now, by the way, the Rambam has different languages. Sometimes the Rambam says, lo, like a person shouldn't. Asur means this is a prohibition. This is halachically forbidden. Okay? Asur la'adam lanhig atzmo. You're not supposed to practice, right? We're in 2:6, right? Chapter 2, Halacha 6, Vav. Okay, Perek Bet Halacha Vav. Right? You're not supposed to be like smooth tongued. Like sometimes a person carries himself in such a way that he's like slippery, right? Boker Tov, Baruch Haba, right? Good to see you back and walking and healthy. Sometimes a person carries himself and he's like slippery.
So
right?
What do you mean, like kind of like sneaky,
like smooth, like we're going to see what this means. In other words, like you can't quite put your finger on it, but it's not the ethical perspective you wanted. You know, like you're having a discussion with someone, you've got a legitimate grievance, and he's just slick. He's just while you're talking to him, he's got an answer for everything, but it just bothers you, right? V'lo yeh echad bapeh ve'echad balev. And a person shouldn't be... Now, what do you think this means? Echad bapeh ve'echad balev. One in the mouth, one in the heart. Right. In other words, what you say should be a function of who you are. And who you are should be the kind of thing that you're proud to say. And if you're saying one thing, and inside is another, if you're carrying yourself as an ethical person, as an honest person, but inside you're not quite honest, something's wrong. So, the Rambam here is not talking about a person who steals and murders, etc., but pretends to be an upstanding citizen. That's obvious. Those are separate prohibitions against theft and against murder. You don't need that. This is the person who is disingenuous in a way that you can't quite nail it down halachically. And so that's why the Rambam decides to give you some examples. So what does Rambam say? Right? V'lo yeh echad bapeh v'echad balev. You shouldn't be one thing when you say it and another thing in your heart. Ela tocho kevaro. Your inside should be like your outside. V'ha'inyan shebalev hu adavar shebapeh. He doesn't say what's on your tongue should be in your heart. He says what's in your heart, that's what should come out of your mouth. Ve'asur lignov dat habriot. You're not allowed to... Gnevat dat, we're going to get into this in a second, is where you create a false impression. Right? Okay, we'll see what this means in a minute. By the way, this is true whether the person is Jewish or not Jewish. Now, why the Rambam chooses to say this may be because given the status of Jews amongst the nations of the world and how challenging it was, sometimes they did not, you know, that they had a strained relationship with the non-Jews. So this is such a gray area. Okay, so it doesn't matter if you do it to a guy. Rambam says, no, that's not true. Right? You have to behave in this ethical fashion, everybody. Kate said, how does this work? So here's an example. Lo yimkor le'nachri b'sar nevela b'imkom b'sar shchuta. Let's say a guy comes into your butcher store. He's not Jewish. And he wants to buy some meat. Right? He wants to buy some meat. And he's not Jewish. So if he's not Jewish, it doesn't matter whether the meat is kosher or not kosher. Right? So if you sell him meat that's not kosher, and you tell him it's kosher, right? What's wrong with that?
He's going to have to pay more for it. You're going to...
No. Let's say you charge him the same amount of money. Obviously, if you're charging him more, that's obvious. That's theft. That's easy. There's separate halachos for that. Guy says, I would like to buy some kosher meat. And you say, no problem. Here's some kosher meat. You say, what do you want it for? You say, I'm hungry. I'm going to eat a sandwich. He's not Jewish. There's no difference in the taste. Right? But you sell him a trefa, and it's not even, I'm not talking about you selling pig meat instead of cow meat. There could be a health difference, all sorts of things. But this is cow meat and this is cow meat. It just happens to be that the shechita for this cow, the slaughtering of this cow got messed up a little. There was a problem, there was a perforated lung. So the animal's treif, and you only find it out when you open up the animal. It's perfectly good roast beef. It's the same roast beef as this roast beef, but this one's from a non-properly ritually slaughtered animal. It makes no difference to a non-Jew. So why can't you sell it to him?
Because it makes you look like you're not really, because then you're not really being a kosher butcher.
No. You're a kosher butcher. So? Because it's not honest. I want to tell you something. I once heard from Rav Riskin, interesting thing. When he was interviewing, right? People for the position of the Rebbe in his high school. He and Rav Pinchas Bak Zitzal started high school, I don't know, it must have been the late 70s. And they wanted it to be a special place. It was an incredible high school. I went there. It doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. And he was looking to hire teachers, and they put them through a whole interview process. And one of the questions he asked him was, okay, you order a shaver from a company. Okay? It's a company. It's a non-Jewish company. It's whatever. And you get in the mail, right? And the company is not owned by Jews. You get in the mail, by accident, two shavers. In other words, you ordered a shaver, and they sent you two shavers. So what's Allah? What do you do with the other shaver? So 9 out of 10, only one of them gave the correct answer. What's the correct answer? You send it back. 9 out of 10 of them, well, Allaha, because he's not Jewish, maybe it's not Bar Das. One of them said send it back, that was the one he hired. You could justify things within the range of Allah, but at the end of the day, this is beyond Allah. This is the fact that a person has to be an ethical person. We're in Perek Bet Allah Vav, right? That a person has to be an ethical person, right? You have to be a mensch. I'll give you another example. It's a rainy day, okay? And you're waiting at the bus stop. And it's raining, and there's a bookstore right there. And it's nice and warm in the bookstore, okay? So you go into the bookstore. Right? It's a small bookstore. You go into the bookstore because you want to wait for the bus, and the bus is going to be 20 minutes. But like the storekeeper standing behind the counter, right? And it's like uncomfortable. It's a small bookstore. You're taking up space, whatever. So you pretend to like browse in the books. And the owner looks up and says, can I help you? You say, no, thank you. Right? Have you done anything unethical?
Yeah, you give him the impression that you want to give him a sale, but really, because this man's working hard, you know, he wants to make a sale. But you're really not. You're really just kind of like giving him a very false impression.
Right. You're creating the impression that you might buy something. And so, halacha, it's forbidden to do that. By the way, if you're in that situation, what do you do?
Say yes.
Pardon?
Say yes. Can you help me?
No, that's even worse, because you don't want to buy a book, and you don't even have any money on you for a book.
Then
you
ask him the prices of all the books.
No. Yeah, you just say, I'm waiting for the bus. I don't have any money to buy a book, but would you mind if I wait here? Now, if he's a smart bookseller, he'll say, sure, because the next time you're in the neighborhood, you'll stop by the bookstore. But if he says no, la halacha, you have to leave the bookstore. Right? You're taking up his time. But the gnevas das is that you're not allowed to create an impression that's disingenuous.
What is it wrong to wait inside the bookstore?
If you're giving him the impression that you might buy a book, and he's going to invest his time or his energy on you, you've stolen his time and his energy, right?
What if it's just some cafe? What if it's just like some big like bookstore where like nobody's going to notice you or anything?
So the question is: are there situations where the particular owner of the company actually wants you to be waiting in there? That's a different story. If you're standing at a bus stop and you're in front of a huge Barnes & Nobles, they actually want you to come in. First of all, it's good for their business that it looks like there are more people in there. And second of all, they have statistics on percentages of people who just stand and wait and end up buying a book. So that's a different story. That's why I specifically said a small bookstore. But if you're not sure, you have to ask. Right? Then he goes on. Okay? Then he goes on. And he says, Velo min al shel meta bimakom min al shel shchuta. And you can't sell him the shoe of an animal that died. Like sometimes an animal, you know, eventually animals die. So it just died. It's an old animal, right? You can't sell him a shoe and tell him it's from slaughtered animal. There are different opinions. One opinion is because slaughtered animal, the skin is a little tougher. So the shoe might last longer, right? But there are other mafarshim who say, no, just the fact that a person wants to be wearing a shoe that's pure. Maybe the person loves the Jews. Maybe he's an evangelist and he believes that if you wear shoes that are made out of leather from ritually slaughtered animals, that you're a holier person. It doesn't matter. If that's what he wants, that's what you have to give him. And if you're not giving him that, you have to be honest with him. That's not what you're giving him. The lo yisarhev b'chaviro. This is something people do all the time. This is a big problem. The lo yisarhev b'chaviro. L'sarhev means to press a person. Lo yisarhev b'chaviro shiochal etzlo v'yodeh sheino ochel. Let's say you know that Rafi just went out with some friends and he stuffed his face. He had 3 burgers. You heard him bragging to one of the other guys, I put down 3 burgers, right? And you have like bidyuk, you know, you got some schnitzels and you're making schnitzels. So you know he's not going to want a schnitzel because he's stuffed. So you feel great. I'll ask him if he wants a schnitzel because it'll make me look good. Right? Say, you know, do you want a schnitzel? So he says, no, I'm stuffed, right? But he appreciates the fact that you did a favor. You created the impression that you're doing a favor for him, which is not honest. Because you had no intention of doing a favor for him because you know he's not going to eat it. Yeah?
I don't see what's wrong with that. It's almost like making him feel good also.
But is it honest? Like, let's say you invite someone for Shabbos.
No, I don't think it's probably.
Let me give you an easier example. Let's say I'm sitting with the Madruchim, and I want to be sure everybody has a place for Shabbos, right? And, you know, I feel like I'd like to invite you for Shabbos, right? But this Shabbos isn't good because maybe my wife just got back from the States, whatever it was. And then Josh tells me, no, Misha's already booked up, he's whatever. So I go over to you that afternoon and I say, listen, do you want to come for Shabbos? And I know you can't come for Shabbos because you don't have a place to go. So what's wrong with that? I made you feel good, right? So there's 2 possibilities of what's wrong with that. The commentaries discuss it. The first problem with that is, what if you find out somehow that I knew that you couldn't come to me for Shabbos, right? So then there goes any relationship we have because I'm a dishonest person, right? So the potential for Chilul Hashem is enormous when you do these things.
Well, does it have to mean you're a dishonest person just because you came to me and asked me a lot of
something? You knew you couldn't,
and you come.
Because I'm faking it. I'm not. I might really want to have you for a Shabbos, but I'm not. I'm not genuinely inviting you for this Shabbos. Which brings us to the second issue. It's just not honest. It's like sometimes you have to ask yourself that question: is this honest? You know, I have this line that sometimes goes through my head. If I'm going to do something, and one of my children knew what I was doing, would I be proud of doing it? And if I can't answer yes, it makes me think twice. This is a very gray area. It's an unbelievable halacha that you're responsible for gnevat daat. It's something that you can't quite put your finger on. It's not quite tangible, right?
What if back to like you're saying, like you're making schnitzel and you know the guy's full or something, and like you, I mean, you're happy to give him one if you want to give him one. You're pretty sure he's gonna say no, but like, and he says yes, and you give him one, you're happy to give him one, and like. But I mean, like you probably know he's going to say no. But
well, that's like me inviting Misha for Shabbos, and then maybe Misha decides he's really wanting me to come for Shabbos. So he calls up the people and he says, listen, I'm going to see if I can, whatever. First of all, you get yourself into a bruch, because what if you really can't have him for Shabbos? So that's 2 different scenarios. But second of all, it's not even about whether he could make it work. It's about whether you really want to do it. If you really want, if you know that he's full, but you know, you never know, you're making things, you just want him to feel good. You say, listen, do you want one? Like I have one. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about like you have 3 pieces of schnitzel, you're really hungry and you want them. And you wouldn't offer him because you don't want to have only 2 pieces of schnitzel. But since you know he's stuffed, you take the risk. So then it's true that if he says yes, you got burnt. But that doesn't change the fact that you were doing something. It's not quite, you know, lying in front of the court under oath, but it's not quite honest either.
Well then what's the deal with it, like in tzedakah when it says that you should give, like begrudgingly, that's like a higher level than, or no, it's not a higher level, but you should.
No, that's a different story. Okay. That's talking about, there's a separate issue, which if you remember, we once, we discussed, remember I told you that Vietnam story, you know, Rabbi Cardozo was sitting and these 3 guys came over to him. Do you remember the story?
Yeah.
I just told it to you, right? That's a question of how actions affect how we feel. In other words, if you hate giving tzedakah and you hate beggars and they make you nauseous, but you know there's a mitzvah to tzedakah, don't wait to give tzedakah until you really feel emotionally ready. Give tzedakah. And the more you give, the easier it'll be to give. You don't feel like doing chesed, but you're standing there and there's handicapped children who need your help. Better to help the handicapped kid across the street grumbling the whole way than to say, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm only going to do this if I feel good. And meanwhile, the guy has no way to get across the street. That's a different topic, right? But I'm talking about where you do something and you're hitching a ride in order to get something that you didn't earn. You want to get the goodwill that comes from doing someone a favor, but you know you're not going to earn it because you're not really doing him the favor. Do you understand? That's just dishonest, right? And by the way, I'll tell you something else as an aside. You know what? Think about this discussion that we had last week, right? That I am still processing. One of the issues that a few of the guys brought up was they were struggling with whether, you know, some of the teachers, me included, are really genuine. Like, think about what a powerful statement that is. Think about, you know, sort of how significant that is. That's a very significant thing. How can you learn Torah from someone if you don't think it's genuine? And you know, as a teacher, you have to think, I have to think, okay, so what am I doing to create that impression and how do I rectify that? Is it just that, you know, we need more time together? Is it that there's something I'm doing which is mistaken? In one particular instance, one particular Rebbe, I don't think he has any idea that anybody feels this way, but it doesn't matter because if he's doing something that creates that image, that's a serious issue because it means you can't learn Torah from him. It means that he could be, you know, you can create a Chilul Hashem. You can desecrate Hashem's name without ever realizing it. Right? But you still bear responsibility for that. That's what this is talking about at a certain level. And the Rambam goes on, right? Lo yosahev b'chaviro sheyochal eslo v'yodeh sheyenochal. Don't invite your friend to eat by you if you know he's not going to eat. V'lo yarbelo b'tikrovet v'hu yodeh sheyeno mekabel. Right? Don't try to give him lots of gifts when you know he doesn't want them. You know, like for example, I'm very close with my in-laws. Never had a bad experience with them, Baruch Hashem. And I know that my Boker Tov, I know that my mother-in-law, oh, Boker Tov, welcome. You're more than welcome to sit, join us. No problem. Right? So I know of them, they don't like getting gifts. It's Rabbi, you got to sit or stand in the back, right? No problem. There's a certain type of person just doesn't like, my parents, Baruch Hashem, my in-laws, they feel they have everything they need. And Baruch Hashem, they're in their 60s and they're healthy and whatever it is, or 70s, whatever. They don't need a gift. So let's say I want to give my father-in-law a gift or my mother-in-law a gift. And I know she doesn't really need it. She doesn't want it. And she'll say, no, thank you. So I can only do it if I genuinely think maybe they'll accept it or makes her feel good or whatever. But if I'm doing it knowing that they won't take it because I don't really want to give it, something's wrong with that. It's not honest. Right? V'lo yiftach lo chaviot shehu tzarich lepotchan lemochran kedei liftoto shebishvil kvodo patach v'chein kol yotzei bo. Let's say you have to open up a barrel of wine because you're a wine seller. And you know that tomorrow you're short wine barrels in the stores, you can open this up. And then a friend comes over and you want to make him feel good, say, you know what, in your honor, I'm going to open up a whole new barrel of wine. You were going to open up the new barrel of wine anyway. So, you know, it's like, let's say I have to get in the car now and drive to Tel Aviv. And you need a ride to Tel Aviv. And I say to you, you know what? I really feel like we haven't spent any time together. You know what? I'm going to take some time. I'm going to drive you to Tel Aviv. And I don't tell you that I'm driving to Tel Aviv anyway. So you're arriving at a level of appreciation that's not really, it's not really relative to what I actually did. And there's something dishonest about that. You have to be careful not to say even one word that's seductive or that's smooth or that's gnevas das, that steals a person's impression, right? You need three things. Now we'll get to what these three things are. They're called Sfat Emet, a true lip, in other words, truth in what you say. V'ruach Nachon, and a proper intention. V'lev Tahor, and a pure heart. Mikol Amel V'avot. It has to be free of all other, you know, sort of subliminal or agendas, right? So now, where does this come from? So the Gemara Bava Metzia, there are a number of Gemaras. The Gemara in Pesachim, right? But the Gemara Bava Metzia is a good example. The Gemara Bava Metzia gives an example. I don't know if we have to get in the whole example, but it says like this. This is on Daf Memtet Amud Aleph, okay? Folio 49a, in Baba Metzia. It says, Rav Kahana, Yavu Lezuze Akutna, okay? He took a down payment on some linens. He was a linen cloth salesman, and he took some down payment on some linen. In other words, I want to buy 10 pounds of linen, and it's $10 a pound. So I'm going to owe you $100. So I give you $10. And say, hold the 10 pounds of linen for me. Lisof Iker. Kitna. After he took the down payment, the linens went way up. Okay, so I do a deal with Aaron. And Aaron wants to buy 10 rolls of linen for $100 because he's going to make shirts. And each roll of linen is $10. In between the time he gives me the down payment, we're going to do the deal. The linen doubles. And now each roll is worth $20. So I'm going to lose $100 because I could sell that linen for $200. And you're getting linen the next week, which is worth $200, even though you're only going to pay $100. So what do we do? So Rav Kahana wants to renege, right? Ata lekameh de Rav. So he comes to Rav. He wants to know lo halacha. What's he allowed to do? Amalei b'may de nakita zuzei havlu. For the $10 that he gave you, he purchased one roll. You have to give him that roll the old price. But at the new price, v'idach dvarim ninu, v'dvarim ein ben mishum mechusrei emuna. If you said that you would do this deal, you didn't sign a document, you didn't sign a shtar, and a verbal contract is not a contract. By the way, you should know that this is legal law. We had a couple of instances here at Oraita. I'll spare you the details if you're curious. I'm happy to share them. But in real estate, for example, if the two of you make a deal and you're going to rent him or sell him your house, and he wants to buy it, and you make a deal and you shake and you do whatever it is, but it's all sort of verbal, that contract has no bearing whatsoever. And if he finds a buyer for twice the price tomorrow, right, you're out of luck. If you don't get him to sign a contract, if you don't have witnesses, if you don't have anything, you're out of luck. The reason for that law, by the way, is very healthy because it means that until something's signed, it's not signed and everybody knows that's the law, right? No matter what you think, right? So that's what he says, right? V'dvarim ein ben mishun mechusrei emunah. There's no lack of ethics in words that you take back. And the Mefarshim, by the way, say that there are two possibilities here. We'll get to that in a second. The itmar dvarim, right? Rav amar ein ben mishun mechusrei emunah. Rav Yochanan amar yesh ben mishun mechusrei emunah. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, says when you say something and you renege on it, you're actually doing something unethical. A person puts stock in your word. And if your word is not your bond, something's wrong. So, what do you do? It's machlokas. Meitveis, they ask a question. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Ma Talmud Lomar Hin Tzedek. There's a pasuk that says that you have to have a Fat Tzedek and Hin Tzedek, right? Your measures, your scales have to be the proper weight. They have to be honest scales. And an Eifah, which is whatever, it's a certain large sort of weight. And a Hin, which is a smaller weight, right? So the Gemara says, why does it need to say a Hin Tzedek? If it already said an Eifah, imagine that it says that your pound weight has to be honest and your ounce weight has to be honest. Well, obviously, if your pound weight has to be honest, your ounce weight has to be honest. Why do you need both? So the Gemara says, "Yalo hin bechlal Eifah." Isn't hin included in an Eifah weight? Ela lomar lacha shiyehe hin shel chatzedek v'lav shel chatzedek. Rather, to teach you that when you say yes, it should be righteous, and when you say no, it should be righteous. In other words, so it seems, stand by your words. Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, Hahu, and that's what is referred to, Shelo yedaber echad bapeh ve'echad balev. That a person shouldn't say one thing in the mouth and mean another thing in the heart. So now the commentaries say, well, what is Abaye saying? Who is Abaye saying is right? So one opinion is that since Rav Kahana said, I'm going to accept the deal, he has to stand by it. But Muslim first would say, no, that's not the issue here. The issue is that in this case, he's allowed to renege because he didn't intend something different. He wasn't doing something dishonest. He made a deal based on $10 a roll. But when the deal changed, since they didn't sign a contract, that's a legal recourse, right? However, if he had intended something different in his heart than what he'd done, then that would have been dishonest. So some say that the Rambam comes from here, right? There's a different way of looking at this, and that's a Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma is an amazing Gemara, and it's a good example. Like, we could even share this with our mitzvot class.
What does Yuma mean?
Yoma is the day. Whenever you find a kamatz and an aleph at the end of a word, like ah, it's the same as a hey and a kamatz at the beginning of the word in Hebrew. Yoma is hayom. Gavra is hagever, right? So Yoma is the day. What is the day?
What is
Yom Kippur. This whole masecht is about Yom Kippur, right? So, gever is a man. Givra, itata is a woman, you know. Yalda is a boy. Amar Rava. Okay, Kol Talmid Chacham. The pasuk says Mibayit Umichutz Tetzapenu. It says by the Aron Kodesh that you have to cover it with gold outside and inside. In other words, you had a wood box made of atzei shittim, right? The inside was covered with gold, and the outside was covered with gold.
That seems a bit dishonest, but the real essence is wood.
Pardon?
But the real essence is wood.
Well, no, it's not honest, it's art.
You're trying to sell it off as gold when it really
is. Sell it off to who?
To God. I mean,
God's the one who's telling you to do this.
And God knows.
No. No, no, God's the one who's telling you to do this. Hashem is telling you, I want you to make me an Aron, and I want it to be wood, and I want it to be covered on the outside of gold and the inside of gold. The question that I have, the question the Gemara has, is not whether it's honest. The question the Gemara has is, well, what's the point? Like, first of all, who's ever going to see this box that we call the Aron? Only one person. Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, one day. And the Kohen Gadol will never see what's inside. You have a box which is never meant to be opened. By the way, where else do we have an example of a box which is really never meant to be opened? That we see all the time? Pardon? No, that's the one that we tend to open, right? No, what's an example of something that we have that's a very important religious article that we're never supposed to open? Tefillin. What's another example? Mezuzah. Sits there on the door, has the Shema inside of it, but we're not supposed to open it and read the Shema. You have the concept of something which is there, not because I need to see it, but because I need to know it's there. But nonetheless, the Gemara says, why do I need it to be encased in gold on the inside? Like, it's enough. Like, you could make a case for saying it's important to know. So listen to what the Gemara says. And by the way, as a sidebar, which is not really our topic, this Gemara teaches you, among other things, that all of these symbols, all of these artistic fashions, they have reasons, they have meanings, they have messages. We just have to figure out what those messages are. Right, now, this goes back to the discussion we had at the beginning of the year. If you believe that all this stuff is a group of individual, brilliant guys over a couple of centuries who wrote this Torah, so then, you know what? Back then, it might have been meaningful. Today, it's not. But if you believe that this comes from Hashem, so Hashem has some reason that he wants things done in a certain way, and then you have to, it at least challenges you to think about, well, so why do I need that? But okay, so the Gemara says, that's really for our mitzvah class. The Gemara says, Mibayitu michut tetzapenu. You have to layer it or cover it with gold inside and outside. Amar Rava, kol talmid chacham, she'ein tocho kevaro einu talmid chacham. A talmid chacham, whose inside doesn't match his outside, is not a talmid chacham. Now that's a very strong statement. It's not that he's a talmid chacham who's just not ethical. He's not a talmid chacham. Now based on what we've studied in Hilchot Deot, you tell me why. Why is someone whose inside is not like his outside not a Talmud Chacham? What?
You're saying the inside, there's not the real essence is the wood. I mean, so like the inside that it's showing on the surface is the gold. So, you know, I'm giving the impression that my inside is like my outside, but really I'm not.
Right, no, I understand what the comparison is, that just like the Aron has to have gold inside and outside, so do we. But my question is... No, but my question is, why is such a person not a Talmud Chacham? What's giving the opposite message?
He's asking, not answering your question, he's asking a different question.
Oh, you're answering a different question. What question are you answering? Okay. That's what the Gemara says, yeah.
But, so for that's only the inside that it's showing. Its real essence, what it's really on the inside is the wood.
Oh, I see. You're asking a different question. If the gold on the inside is my intentions on the inside, and the gold on the outside is what comes out of my mouth, what's the wood in the middle?
That's what you really want.
Oh, so what do you think the wood in the middle is? I don't know, because then it wouldn't be in the middle. It would be behind the gold.
Yeah.
Pardon? I don't think so. I mean, you could make a case for that. I think it's much simpler. You have your internal intention. Then you have what you're saying. What am I missing here? I'm saying, you know, would you like a burger? Because I bought two burgers. And I come back and I say, hey, Aaron, I got you a burger. Because I know that you just stuffed your face with three burgers, right? So the inside intention in this case is not gold. But what I'm saying is gold. What's missing? What's the third piece?
Transition.
The third piece is just wood. Wood, by the way, represents it is what it is. The action. The action is the action. I have a burger in my hand. If you take it, you took a burger. I give you tzedakah. The tzedakah now is in your hands. That's the action. That's wood. But that wood is not enough. It needs gold. It has gold. What kind of gold do I give it? Do I give it any gold? Right? But let's go back to my question, if that's okay. Why is such a person, listen, I don't know, Rav Noam Zatam Tchach, knows a lot of Gemara, Baruch Hashem, right? Rav Lichtenstein is a towering Talmud Chacham. And Rav Lichtenstein, let's say Chas V'Shalom, Rav Lichtenstein's outside didn't match up to his inside. He preaches a good preach, but on the inside his intentions are not pure, Chas V'Shalom. Why would that mean he's not a Talmud Chacham? He doesn't say it's a pagam, it's a flaw in who he is. He doesn't say it's a Chil Hashem. He says it's such a person is just not a Talmud Chacham. Why? Based on everything we've learned in Hilchot Deot, why is he just not a Talmud Chacham? According to Rava. Sunday morning. Oh, because how did we define a Talmud Chacham? What's a Chacham? What's Chochmah? It's balance. It's moderation. That's the definition of moderation. What's really happening to a person who's inside and outside don't match is they're off balance. They're off balance. They're off kilter. If you could really achieve balance, the inside and the outside would always be the same because that's what balance is. Does that make sense? That would seem to be pshat. By the way, just to show you that this is not just a random thought, the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, okay, we haven't gotten into Nezikin at all, but there's a book called Kinyan, which is all the laws. By the way, when you choose to own a Rambam, and you know, there's different ways to own a Rambam. Some people want the big set, some people... I think it's worth having a two-volume set, especially if you're going to college. And it has all of Rambam in it. If you can't follow the Hebrew, then you can get volumes with English translation, right? But you get like two volumes, and all of this is in... And the second one deals with a lot of this stuff that I'm talking about now. And if you come and you're curious, you can come to my office. What I did was, like, let's say you see on the outside, it says Zeraim, it says Avoda, it says Karbanos, it says Tara. These are the 14 books, right? But you don't know where Hilchos Yisuri Biya is. You don't know where Hilchos Shabbos is. So what I did years ago when I first bought a Rambam, and I have two of them now, one at home and one here, is I just made a list of all the Sfarim, all 14 Sfarim with all the different sets of halachot. So if I want to know where the brachos is in Avar Zmanim, I just look it up in my inside cover. It's a smart thing to do. But anyway, so the Rambam in the 18th chapter of Hilchos Mechira, right, there's a whole complicated sections of the laws of transactions. Like, you think it's such an easy thing. You know, they tell a story, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that there was a butcher in the town. And he was a Yeri Shamayim. And he was the town shochet. And, you know, if you're a shochet and you're selling people meat, so you can sometimes get into arguments with people. And the halachos are very complicated in shechita. People would say, is it kosher? People would check him out. They weren't sure. Did he sell him enough? Did you salt it enough? Is it firm enough? Do you have batats? Do you have super mahadrin? So one day he just said he couldn't handle it. So he decided he's going to quit and he's going to stop being a shochet because, you know, he's just going to open up a store and have a simple store and people won't have such a hard time, complications. So they came to Rav Yisrael Salanter and said, like, if he leaves and he stops being, we're not going to have a shochet in the town. So Rav Yisrael Salanter calls the butcher, he calls the shochet in to see him and they start talking. And he says to him, look, you know, you've been a shochet here for years, your father was a shochet, we need you in the town, but tell me, if you left Hilchos Shechita, you know, because it's too complicated and you feel like you're not sure if you're upholding the standard of law that you want, what would you become? So he said, well, I think I'm going to open up a store and, you know, just be a storekeeper. So Rizal Salanta says, you're nervous about being a shochet because of the complications of laws and you want to be a storekeeper? He says, I wouldn't be a storekeeper. The halachic complications of being a storekeeper and being honest are huge. And if you look at the amount of halacha on this, it's true. So the Rambam says like this, Perek Yudchet Halacha Aleph, Asur l'ramot et bnei adam b'mekach u'memkar. You're not allowed to cheat. You would think that that should not need to be in a halacha. Pretty obvious, but obviously you have to write these things down. Oli gnovet datam, and you can't steal someone's dat, right? Like we said, you can't make it as though you're doing a favor, etc. Ve'echad oved kochavim ve'echad Yisrael shavim b'davar zeh. And this is true for Jews and non-Jews, right? Christian evangelist comes into your store, you can't treat him any differently from a Jew. You have to sell him the same way, and you have to you can't do gnevas dat. Same thing, right? And if you know that there's a flaw, if you're selling a guy a car and you know that on the bottom of the bumper, there's a scratch. It makes absolutely no difference to the functioning of the car. This guy will probably never see it. But it's a flaw. You're not allowed to sell him the car unless you show him the scratch. And then you can debate whether it reduces the price. Right? Chat. Okay? Hayayodea shiit, right? Ze'afil lignov dat abriot bedvarim asur. And you're not even allowed to flatter a person, right? Jewish car salesmen would have a very difficult time, right? A woman walks in, and she's a little heavy, and you want to sell her a car. And you say to her, that's a beautiful coat. You're a stunning woman. And you don't think she's a stunning woman? That's a problem. You're flattering someone. There's a dishonest taste to that. And the Rambam says that's actually prohibited in the laws of Mekach HaMemkar. You're not allowed to do that. And all of this stuff, the essence of this stuff, basically leads us back to what we'll finish with, which is the three things that you need to have in your life, right? You need Sfat Emet. You need to believe, now listen, we're not perfect, and we may make mistakes, but you need to believe that what comes out of your mouth is true and honest, right? V'ruach nachon, right? If you look at where ruach appears in Chazal, right? How do we say V'ruach nachon chadesh b'kirbi? Give me the proper motivation. Give me the proper intention. Your intention and motivation has to be pure. Has to be correct. V'lev tahor. Now, we've said before that lev doesn't really mean the heart. Lev means the intellect, right? And therefore, you have to know that in thinking about this, that you believe that you're doing the right thing. Mikol amel vavot, from all trickery and whatever. And if a person could practice this... By the way, why does this follow the halacha of silence? Why does this follow halacha hey? Anyone take a guess? Why is it that after we say that siag lechokhma shtika, that a way to remain balanced and wise is by knowing when to be quiet? Why?
You always just say the first thing that comes to your mind, the chances are it's going to be something that's not 100% honest. And you give it a second of faith, you can always weigh it out and figure out if it's honest.
Okay, so in other words, being silent will prevent you from being, you know, sort of deceitful.
Not being like silent entirely, just giving it a thinking first.
Thought. What's interesting, though, is the Mefarshim actually say the opposite. They say something interesting. They say sometimes silence itself is a nas dvarim. Like you're in a store, and a guy looks up from you in the storekeeper, and he smiles, and you just smile back. You don't say anything. You don't say anything. You're not doing anything, right? Siag
l'chach mashtika.
But in this case, the fact that you don't say anything allows him to get an impression.
You did not say something. You smiled, but you still said something.
Okay, so you didn't smile. You didn't say anything. You know that he might be thinking that you're there to buy something. So your silence is itself sometimes carries an air of deceit. It's a risk. And so maybe because of that, this halacha follows that halacha. Know that in your actions, in what you do, you have to attempt to be as honest as you can be. Doesn't mean you always get it right, but at least you have to want to. Right? And that's a further step into becoming an ethical human being. So that's a little food for thought. Shem should bless us all. That what's inside matches the outside. This week, that will mean we'll all turn into jelly donuts. Bezrat Hashem.